Podcast Network Asia. Network Asia.
Welcome to Family is the Answer, an adoption and foster care podcast. I'm Karina Kuna Henson, Managing Director for Ruhe Foundation. Together with Podcast Network Asia, we're here to share resources to inform you and stories to inspire you about adoption and foster care. Hope you enjoy listening. Hi, everybody. I want to welcome you to our Family is the Answer podcast. My name is Karina. And I have just the wonderful privilege of representing our team at Ruhe Foundation today and the many families that we get to work with through our advocacy work. And thankfully, I do not do this work alone. We have a really incredible team. Not all of them are based in Manila. In fact, one of our staff, Esther Susan, who's joining me today, is actually based in Cagayan de Oro, which I'm going to ask you a little bit more about in a bit. But she's our manager for communications. And she's actually taking her PhD in Christian Clinical Counseling at the Asian Graduate School of Theology.
Big stuff.
Super, yes. Super cool stuff, which I'm going to get to explain. But first, I just want to say Esther's also a really dear friend. And it's really a privilege to have her on our staff because our work has gotten better. A lot of the communications that you see on our website, sometimes on social media and through the different platforms that we communicate, the voice behind a lot of that is Esther. And so we're very, very privileged to have her. So thank you, Esther, for saying yes to doing this podcast with me.
Thank you. I think I'm excited.
You think you're excited. We will take that. I think I'm excited. First, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about yourself. I kind of teased it a little bit by saying you're living in CDO and, you know, tell us a little bit about where you are in life right now outside of the work that you do for us.
Okay, so I grew up in Cagayan de Oro. We moved there when I was 3. So,
and for people outside of the Philippines, you're gonna have to kind of
geographically explain. So, Cagayan de Oro is in the northern part of the southernmost island of the Philippines. So, it's Bisayan speaking, so it's in that region. It's metropolitan, but not. It's like the place where everyone, that people do have college degrees, but when you talk to them, part of their intern or first jobs is usually on a farm, something like that. So that's how close we are to the mountain, very small city. And yes, I grew up there.
Cool. And you've decided to move back actually just recently.
Yes, I decided to move back. My family, we're all adult children. So when my family decided that they weren't coming back to the Philippines from the U.S., I decided that I also wanted to move out and start my own thing, my own family. And I didn't want, and I wanted to do it somewhere where it was more affordable and somewhere where I had other biological members of my family whom I could have.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there because I feel like one of the things that I should have said as part of your introduction, which is really the reason why you're here, which many of you should have figured out by now because of how we've titled this podcast, is you're actually preparing for parenthood. And that having been one of the reasons that you've decided to move back to your provincial hometown, really to be closer to some biological relatives and stuff like that. But Esther is actually preparing for parenthood through adoption. She is not married. So Esther is actually single and has taken on very boldly the challenge of being a single mom. And you're right at the cusp of that, right?
Yeah. So this is just going to be disjointed. So I hope you can help me tie it in together. But one of the reasons I moved was because I wanted to start a family. And in my generation and age range, usually it's like, especially if you're a female, you're waiting for someone else to kind of help you get into that, right? But I decided that I want to start a family now. And then I realized because of Ruhe Foundation, like I didn't know before I started working with Ruhe Foundation, that you can adopt as a single person. It's like my mind was blown. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep thinking about it. And then eventually when I realized, oh, like I could move out already, I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start a family. I'm going to move somewhere where it's more affordable to raise children, to, you know, the food and the rent and utilities are more affordable for a single person, right? It's a single parent household, single income household. So I was really thinking, how do I plan to raise my family affordably, and part of that was really I'm moving.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that there's already so much right there, Esther, because the kind of life changes that you've made to make room for your kids is just really admirable. To have seen you take that step and to do some hard things, make some hard choices and some personal sacrifices, like leaving. I saw Esther uproot her life in Manila over the course of a few months, as soon as she was certain that this was something she wanted to do and that adoption was going to be part of her story. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about where you're at in this adoption process, because I want to talk to you a little bit more about the emotional stuff and, you know, how you're preparing really for receiving your kids. But maybe we can get the technical stuff out of the way.
Okay. So right now I'm in document collection.
Right.
Somebody described adoption without going through an agency as DIY, do it yourself. That's really what it feels like. It's like when you go to the hardware store and not every hardware store has what you need, so you have to go from one to the other, right? Or like, I didn't know you can renew NBI clearance online now. And then they tell you, okay, make an appointment to pick it up. And then you go there and it's not, you have to pick it up. You just like get your new face. You just get a new picture and
picture,
everything.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you pick
you don't
it up.
Go there and pick up a new face.
Yeah. But that was really great. And still, I guess, because I moved back, it's like, I still needed to ask for help in the province. Like in Manila, it's more, oh, you can look it up. They have a Facebook page, right? But
right.
In the province, it's really still more word of mouth. So you ask, where can I get a med evaluation? Where can you do this?
Which I think it's really important to mention that. So some of you are probably watching and wondering, like, you know, why isn't Early Foundation taking on Esther's case and helping Esther process this adoption? Well, unfortunately, we don't operate in CDO. And in that region of the Philippines. And so we're very limited. And so Esther's going through what many Filipino families go through. Anyone who would, you know, be adopting from the provinces where there are no licensed child placing agencies operating yet. This whole DIY type of adoption process, having to figure it out and navigate the many different aspects of that.
Yeah. So I have an assigned social worker, but they won't really... Like for them, it's like finish all your documents first. I guess that's where I felt the pressure of a single income household though, because it's like, okay, I need to take this day so I can have my med eval, right? But I also need to work so that I can pay the rent.
Pay for my med eval.
Yeah, right? Yes, like that. Or, and then it's like, okay, but now, and then it didn't push through the first day that I tried. So I had to be like, okay, another plan, but I can't do it next week because I have to work, right? So that's where I felt some of the pressure. But at the same time, it's something that I want to do, I guess. And I'm really nearing the end. Like I have a clear book and I have each page has a title on it. And then when I put in the NBI clearance, it's like, okay, I got that. Senamar, okay, I got that, you know, and I can see how much I still have to do. And it's like, it's getting less and less. So that's so exciting.
That's very exciting. Well, great. And you've shared a couple of like practical tips as well. But would it be okay if we dive into now more how you've been preparing for parenthood and for actually receiving the kids into your family? Maybe a good place to start is you being a single person. Oh. And I hope I can ask you some questions. I won't sugarcoat anything. I'll just be really straight about some of the questions I'll ask, which I can because we're friends. Why is it that you decided to adopt instead of waiting till you got married? Why adopt now? Is it because marriage is not something in the horizon for you anymore? And these are things I know the answers to, by the way, but I mean, I think everybody listening, is it because you're not considering marriage anymore? I mean, where are you at marriage and all of that play into this decision to adopt?
Okay. Well, the simple answer first, marriage is still, it's an option for me. However, I guess growing up, just to give like some of my personal background, it's like growing up, there were a lot of things I was told not to do because it would scare potential partners away, right? Like I did martial arts, or like they say, okay, don't show that you're smart or too smart because it'll scare, you know.
Guys away.
Yeah, the guys away. And I think at a certain point, I decided I'd rather live with that because, like I told my mentor, whom you know, I said at the end of the day, if you keep on doing martial arts, you get a black belt, right? But if you stop martial arts to wait for a possible partner, you might end up without a partner
And without a black belt.
And without a black belt. So I'd rather go for the black belt. Kind of same thing with adoption. Like, if I wait until marriage to adopt, which is really on my heart, partly because of the crisis also, it's like there's so many children waiting for a family. If I can afford it, then why not? And then also, why wait? If I don't wait, then if I go through the process, then I will have a family. I'll have children. They will have a family. They'll have a home. And if there's a potential partner there, then, oh, that's somewhere down the line. But if I wait for a partner and the kids will wait or maybe age out, and then I'll just wait and I won't have started a family, and then I might not have a partner. And then, like, what do you have at the end of the day?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like you're certain about the desire to adopt. Yes. And then it's something that you want to really do in your lifetime. And you're just not willing to gamble that. Yes. You want to make sure that the things that you have control over right now, you're able to do. And if you can adopt now, you're going to do that. Well, that's amazing, Esther. I have another kind of hard question.
Okay.
Which I've asked another single adoptive mom on the show before. Have you ever thought that maybe adopting would decrease your chances now of finding your future husband? I'm just asking what everybody's thinking. I mean, I'm just playing the back
end to me. So.
Right. So I mean, I'm just really curious if that's something you've considered or wrestled with, and where that plays. How have you come to terms with that?
I have wrestled with it because I think I still have that desire to get married someday. But who am I with that? So some people really, they've said it to me, like, no, people aren't very delicate sometimes with
Or sensitive,
but saying, no, like, have you given up on marrying?
Right.
So somebody really said that because I said, oh, I'm planning to adopt. And they're like, no, don't give up. And I was like, I'm not giving up on marriage. I just want to adopt.
No.
Right. So I've wrestled with it, like, because there's more than just me to accept and love, right? There would be me and my children. There's like, my kids would go through one birth certificate change, and then if my husband adopts them, they'll go through another one, right? So many things. I think at the end of the day, for me, it's like, if not about that, if my husband has the desire to adopt, like, I believe that with my faith, you know, I believe God would adopt him in advance,
right,
and told him, you know, be ready. Be ready for more than just a wife. You know, be ready for a big family. Be ready right. for a mixed family. So I guess for me, I'll just trust that part to God. And then I'll obey now in what I can
do. Well, I admire you so much for that, Esther. Thanks for just being so vulnerable and sharing really the realities of it. I mean, I've talked to so many single people who say they want to adopt, and sometimes they can't put their finger on it as to, like, you know, what their hesitations are. And some of them hesitate because of the thought of that maybe shutting the door on marriage for them. Because if I do adopt now, would that shut the door on marriage for me? And we don't sugarcoat it, and we don't set that aside, because we don't want single people to rush into adopting, not having considered that hard question, and then later on saying, hey, I'm still single, I hope to get married, but now I'm not married, and it's all because of you know your fault, or it's all because of my kids, it's because I adopted. And it's just not fair to put that on our children.
Yeah.
So I really admire you for processing that and going through the, you know, the hard stuff. But maybe to talk a little bit also around family. Did this shock your family or relatives? Like, how did you warm them up to the idea of you as a single person adopting?
I think it helps that, especially my mom's family, they're very open to the idea in general of adoption. Mm-hmm. They have very soft hearts. Like, we talk about, oh, founding a children's home or something. So it's something that apparently, when I was young, I mentioned to my mom, oh, I feel like I want to support or put up a children's home sometime. And I found that it's been one of her dreams. And it's one of my grandmother's dreams, her mom's dreams. And my mom told me, oh, maybe one day that'll be you, right? So there's that. And then there's Rohe Foundation. And I'm like, oh, there's another way we can help process adoptions. We can get them to families faster. And in that sense, it's like, okay, so I'll join that side. I'll be an adoptive parent. But honestly, I don't think I convinced them any one time, or like there was no powerful argument that I presented. I just repeated myself until they believed me. Until my mom went from,
sure,
oh, that would be nice, to please learn to cook, you're going to starve my grandchildren, you know, something like that. That's when I knew, I'm like, okay, we're getting there. But I think it's the consistency. It's being willing to say it out loud consistently, even when you can see in their eyes, like, they don't really believe me. Or they hope I'm sure, but they're also not sure, and they worry about me. So right. It's like just being willing to say, yes, I'm sure I'll do it. Please be a part of their lives and my life. Yeah, something like that.
How about your friends? What was the reaction of your friends to this kind of news? And how have you kind of been preparing the community around you for this?
My friends are shocked, but they're usually 100% behind me. maybe because they're my friends, they're my peers, right? I also just repeat myself until they believe me. So it's like, at first, it just sounds so nice, right? It just sounds like, oh, what a aspirational thing to do.
Right.
You plan to adopt one day. That's wonderful. But at first, they don't think I mean as a single person.
Right.
And they don't think I mean now.
I mean somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
Somewhere
down
the road. In the far future.
When you're married. And I'm just like, no. Now, as a single person. So it's that. It's being willing to say it out loud. And it's being willing to repeat yourself. Because it's like the first 5 times they won't believe you, and then maybe the 6th to 10th time they'll be like, they'll start to ask questions like, are you serious? Have you thought about this or that? Or, you know, about getting married? And then around the 11th onwards time, they'll be like, can I be Nina? You know, can I spoil your kids? You know, it gets to that part. Or I have a friend, her children are my goddaughters. Mm-hmm. And my friend's already trying to prepare them to meet my kids, and that they'll be older than them, even if they never saw me, like, have a baby, right? And then we were on a video call recently, and my goddaughter was like, where are they? Can I meet them now? Are you going to bring them next time? I was like, wait. So she's really excited. And for me, that's just one of the ways. It's really just to tell people, even when it's scary.
Yeah.
And I think it's like when you make grand plans, right? You get afraid that, what if it doesn't push through? And then you'll have to explain yourself all over again. Well, if you believe in it, well, I believe in it, right? So, and I'm going for it. And even if it's taking a little longer than I thought it would, it's just like, no, I'll just keep saying it, and I'll just keep pushing forward. And it's that life that they see that eventually convinces them that I'm serious.
Right.
Yeah. And they're usually pretty excited when they know that you're actually serious. When they know you're not pulling their leg or making a joke.
Well, I was just thinking that that's actually a really good insight for a lot of families when it comes to talking about adoption. Because we are actually doing a talk together very soon. We're doing an event called Stronger Generations, where we're each doing a talk. You're doing a talk called Nothing is Beyond Repair, and I'm doing a talk called It Doesn't Need to Be Awkward. And that's because of Esther's background. She's going to talk a little bit about trauma-informed care, right? And all of that. So do look out for that. Just a really quick little plug there.
Hi everyone, Stancy here.
This is Ro.
My name is Chino.
And this is Camus.
If you're into anything and everything wrestling related, listen to our podcast, The Wrestling Podcast, available on Spotify and all major podcast platforms. Make sure to follow us on social media at Wrestling2XPod as well.
Peace.
The segment I'm doing, It Doesn't Have to Be Awkward, is really about talking about adoption. And what I find a bit of a teaser, we tell families is that actually the awkwardness in talking about adoption actually rests within us. It's kind of like when talking to our kids, like how to tell your kids they're adopted, you talk about adoption telling and things like that. Usually it's more awkward for the parent to tell their child that they're adopted than it is for the child to find out that they were adopted. And what you're saying is actually for yourself and convincing your family. So it applies to the community as well. You just gotta keep repeating it until it's normal for you and it's normal for them, right? Like, until you need to warm up to you need to muster up the courage, the strength to kind of keep saying it. Yeah. And then at the same time, after they've heard it enough, it becomes normal. It becomes something that's easier to talk about because you've initiated that conversation so many times, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought that was really insightful because I think a lot of times we're looking for handles. Like, how do we talk about it? It's so hard to start that conversation. And it really is on us to break the ice and to put it out there. So yeah, I just think that's really cool how you just said across the board, family, friends. I just kept telling them. I just kept repeating myself till they believed me. Well, I know you've done a lot of preparing as well. I thought it was funny. Your mom said, you know, you better learn how to cook or else you're going to starve my grandchildren. Any other kind of practical preparations that you've had? Also, I want to ask you about financially how you're preparing for that. You know, what kind of changes and adjustments you've made? Because someone could be listening and they're like, oh, Esther, you must have a lot of money. You must be really, you know, you must live a very comfortable life so that you can adopt children and not have to worry about the financial implications. But the truth is, I've seen Esther have to make a lot of adjustments in her life financially to accommodate them and make room for them and prepare for them. Not just this year, last year. I mean, a lot of these changes she started preparing for and thinking through last year. So yeah.
Financially. So, I mean, I'll just say right out that as a single person, I'm pretty comfortable. So as a single person, you know, I can have coffee where I want and pretty much eat where I want, not every day, but you know, just enough to go out regularly with friends. But it's weird now because whenever I buy a cup of coffee, I think, oh, my children's education, you know, or a cup of coffee, or like, oh, I met with my insurance agent a couple of days ago, / last night, or well, you know, recently, and for me. A lot of that was, I had a lot of questions, like, how do I set up for my kids' future? If something happens to me, how much do I need to leave them with so that I can go to college? So they're not a financial burden on any family member who, you know, takes care of them. So, and when we crunch the numbers, it's like, oh, I'm so comfortable as a single person, but since I put tuition and, you know, their food, because I'm not eating as much as they will, right? Or as we will as a family. But we did it as if I already had children. That's how we set up the budget and then looked at, oh, what do I need? It's like, oh. Like, all I could think was, I can really live really well as a single person, you know? But that's something I was struggling with all year, actually, because, like, I could have a smaller house, but I don't. I got a bigger house because I'm like, what kind of house do I want to raise my children in? I want them to be able to see the sky. I want them to have a yard, right? I want them to be in a secure place. So this is my rent budget. If I was alone, this is my rent budget because I'm considering children. I had to save up for a ref because it had to be a bigger refrigerator because I have to put more food in it, right? Because if I was single, I can get a small ref. I'll be fine. But not if I'm making how many meals a day in a week, right? And sometimes when it was really hard, when it's discouraging or I felt like, oh, am I really financially prepared? Like one of the days I just wanted, so I really had nothing in my house that I moved. So I really wanted ramyun. And then, so I bought ramyun. And then I remembered I didn't have a pot yet. I just had a gas range.
You just moved in.
Yes. And I was just like, oh, I should probably buy a pot now. Like, it's the right timing. I want to make ramyun.
Yeah. And then I need a pot.
Yeah. And then I went to the, you know, the part of the store where you can buy a pot. And there was a 1 liter pot, which would make enough for me, right? And then there was like a 4 to 6 liter pots, the bigger ones. And of course, in terms of price point, the 1 liter is a lot cheaper. Yeah. And it was so hard. I was really holding both for so long. Like, I looked so weird. I had to step back from the shelf because people would come look at the pots and I'd just, you know, standing there
staring at
holding
these
pots. No, because I really felt like at that point it was a bit tight finances. So I was like, can I afford, you know, a bigger pot or should I just buy the small one? But for me, I mean, it feels like such a small decision, right? But for me, it was really big. If I bought the small pot, I was really at the point where I'm not going to adopt anymore. Financially, like, I can't do this.
Right.
I'm tired. I'm scared. I'm terrified, you know, of what it might entail because what if they eat more than I budget for? And I knew that I had to make that decision that day because I was really tired that time. I put both pots back and just like, I won't have ramyun tonight. And then I was going to the, you know, to the checkout. And then I went back and I got the bigger pot. And then the funny thing is they didn't even have that pot on file. So I had to go back and get another one because they're like, oh, this brand shouldn't even be on the shelf. It's no longer on file. So I had to go back. And I was just like, I'm just like, I'm not even gonna look at the 1 liter pot. I'm just gonna get the big one. I'm not even gonna think about it. So I brought it home. I made ramen and I laughed at myself because, you know, the ramen's like at the very bottom of the pot because I'm only making for myself, right? And like one day that pot's just gonna be full of noodles and then we're all gonna eat it together. And then it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean,
it was hard.
It just meant, it symbolizes so much. And those are like the little everyday decisions. And I think it's surfacing the fact that adopting impacts every aspect of your life. And for you, just a huge life change. Everything from, I guess it's the way someone might prepare for marriage or like, or to have a baby and you have to like, okay, I don't have diapers worked into my budget. You're thinking actually about adopting, which we should mention, not just one child. She's open to old, not just one, I don't know.
A sibling group.
A sibling group, two or three maybe. Yeah. And not like babies. She's looking at older kids.
What's the age range? 10, 11, 12. Anywhere between 9 to 12.
Anywhere between 9 to 12. So these are big kids that eat and, you know, will have an appetite and get hungry when they get home from school. And they'll probably eat that whole pot of ramen all by themselves.
I will probably have
and you will probably not get to eat anything.
I will eat all the ramen.
But it's such a symbolic, I guess, act for you of just act of faith.
Yes.
To say like, no, God, I'm going to get the big pot because I'm going to do it as an act of preparing for my kids. And I think sometimes we think like we overlook those little decisions and acts of preparation that families have to make. But I'm so glad you acknowledged that as really it wasn't just pots. You know, it wasn't just I buy a small pot or a big pot. It was really an act of, am I really committed to this? Am I committed to it enough to have to buy bigger pots?
Yeah.
Get more beds, you know, like make more room, you know, give up my ramyun, you know, different things like that were things that you've been processing. You've been thinking about.
Yeah. Another like, so before I came, right, because I'm in Manila now in this podcast, but I come from the province. So before I came, you have to take pictures of your house for the application. And the kids' rooms weren't fixed yet because there were still balikbayan boxes that were still half unpacked. You know, it was crazy. And I'm a single income household again. So if I'm just fixing, I'm not working. So that was something I had to think about. But I cleaned both of the kids' rooms.
You have two extra rooms.
I have two extra rooms. So wow. I cleaned both of them and then they're like, you know, I was just wiping it down and I was imagining, it's like, oh, I want to buy them shoes. I don't know their shoe sizes yet, right? I can't just like buy shoes. But I was so excited to like help them fix their closets and get like shop with them for whatever bed sheets they want. I'm like, are they gonna want cars or Batman? Is it gonna be Marvel versus DC or something happening here? And I didn't want to buy the sheets like without them.
Yeah.
But that was very emotional for me. Because I could do something else with those rooms. They could be offices. They could be spare rooms or
guest rooms.
Guest rooms, bed spacers, right? But they're not. They're my kids' rooms. So, and I felt the same way, like with a crib. It's the same way. If you buy a crib if you were expecting a baby. Well, me, I'm cleaning out rooms.
Right. So. Wow. I think it's one of the things that you told me that struck me so much was, you know, what are the reasons why? Because when Esther told me that she was moving back to Cagayan de Oro and leaving Manila, I was admittedly like, yes, I want to be supportive about this adoption, but like, why do you have to go? Like, you know, we would really like to have you here in Manila. And she's saying, well, you know, like, do you know how much it costs to rent a house in Cagayan de Oro? Like, you know, what I spend on renting a room here in Manila, I can get a house. I could get a house with that same amount of money that could house, you know, four children maybe, even, you know, like two in a room. And I just thought, you know, these were some of the things that Esther was processing, you know, like she was willing to move her life over. She was willing to buy the extra pot, you know, have to explain this to her family over and over. There were just so many different things that you've done in the last year or so to prepare the community around you and your life. Yeah, for this change. Another thing I want to ask you is about the fact that you are adopting older kids. You said 9 to maybe 13. It makes me so happy because I remember the day that we got a report, I think from one of the other child placement agencies, said that they said, hey, guys, you know, they were celebrating that the oldest child they had placed for adoption just got placed. We just placed the oldest ever child domestically for adoption. And I said, oh, really? Wow, that's amazing. How old was this child? And they said 7. And it just weighed so heavily on me. It added evidence to this truth that we're building that, you know, actually the Philippines, children over the age of 4 are considered unadoptable domestically. Just that sad reality. And to hear you say that you are adopting older kids, potentially between the ages of 9 to 13, is amazing. How did this happen? What made you decide to be open to that?
First of all, I don't want to do diapers. Like, I'll just put it out there, especially as a single mom.
I respect that.
Well, I was also a kids' church teacher for the last 9 years, I think. So, and I handled preteens, and I led a team, and we would spend, sometimes there were just 2 of us and 60 kids, right, at a time. And I love every second that I spent with preteens. That preteens is like 10 to 12 years old,
right?
So I just love it so much. I love the way they think. I love what they talk about. I love it even when they're hard to talk to, like when you can't really draw them out. I love helping them figure out like what's going on in their lives or with their families, and I guess that really sold me on it, that right. I love it so much that I wouldn't mind adopting that age. And I personally, as a single, like a lot of this is because I'm really adopting as a single person, right? But the level of energy where I have to chase them the time. Okay. Because I've also...
Like toddlers, like a toddler.
Yes, or even I've taught 7 to 9.
And there's just a lot of energy.
They're just running all over the place. The preteens, they're getting to the dignified age, right? So they don't want to look worse than everyone else. So they're not running around. They consider themselves adults.
Yeah.
So you can't just trick them with jokes and things. You really have to build relationships with them. So I was like, okay, I don't want to run after them. I don't want to do diapers. I want a chance to interact with them as children before they hit the teenage years. So preteens.
And I think, and I think it's great. It's also because you know so much about a lot of the fears that that people might have about adopting older children, you've actually been able to debunk with science. And I think that's really what your talk at our Stronger Generations event is going to cover, right? Like, you know, nothing is beyond repair. Yes. You have a talk that you do and some research that you've gathered around how actually, even in the teenage years, there's that window.
Yes, so especially in the teenage years, right? So there's the 0 to 3 age where that's the first wiring of a child.
Right.
And then the teenage years is the rewiring. So basically teenagers are toddlers who can talk. It's like everything is new again, but this time they can complain about it versus toddlers.
Right.
Who are not verbal yet, right?
Right.
And that's the window, though. It's like the biggest opportunity you have to rewire anything that was damaged before. Well, you can do it at any age, but the teenage years are your best bet when they're growing up. So I'm not going to miss that window if I adopt older children. And if you adopt within the teenage years, you're not missing that window. You have the most opportunity that exists to rewrite what they expect of family, of people, right? Because of how they grew up or maybe their background. Maybe if they were foundlings, you have a chance to say, okay, I chose you. Like, no matter what you say as a teenager, you know, whether you're angry or sad about something, I chose you. That's not something you can change.
Yeah.
And it's just something that you have to, you just keep repeating or you just keep being in their lives. So I also got to speak with she's also a director of a children's home, but she's also a stepmother and a foster mother and a biological mother. So we were talking about how it's like teenagers are just teenagers the world over. It doesn't actually matter how they came into your family. There's always going to be the level where you're figuring things out and just assuring them that no matter what you do, I love you. And she said it's not that different. It's just something that you have to stick with
right
until they grow up. Which my mom also tells
Right. Like they say, like, you know, we always say, like, they ask, will adopted children, will adopted teenagers rebel? Well, will your biological teenagers rebel? Probably. And I feel at the heart of it, rebellion is really just, it's that testing of, will you still love me even if I do this? You know, will you still accept me even if I do this? And biological children could do that just as well as children who've come to your family through adoption. So, yeah. Well, Esther, I've learned so much from you, and I'm sure that the people listening to our podcast have learned a lot too. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, and I'm going to ask you to maybe just close us off with a message for your future kids. Our hope is that this podcast would live forever, and that, you know, maybe in a few months, we're going to meet some children who I'm just going to love so much and want them to hear this, want them to hear and see and be able to witness and look back on the journey that you went through as a mother and as a woman preparing to welcome them into your life. So do you have a message?
It's something I write in my diary almost every day. Actually, I say, just wait for me, I'm coming. Because I'm adopting older children, so they've been waiting longer. And they know when they cross a certain age that it's almost impossible. Like, it's like a death knell, right? Oh, I'm 5. No one's going to want me until I age out, right? And if that's the thought in their head, then when they turn 5, if I'm adopting the youngest at 10, then he'll have been thinking that for 5 years, right? So my message is just wait for me. I'm coming. I'm not giving up. It's hard. Like, I run into blocks here and there, but I'm not going to stop. So just wait for me. And I hope you're excited for a life of adventure, because I'm so excited to live this life of adventure with you. I can't wait to take you to Mount Fuji. I can't wait to play with my dogs, who will probably not stay with me anymore. When you guys come, they'll only want to play with you because you have more energy than me. And I can't wait to, you know, bring you into the family and community that I have. I'm so excited to meet you. Wait for me. Just wait for me. And I won't give up on you. So that's
all. Thank you so much, Esther. Yeah, well, thank you for doing what you're doing. Our hope is that people would hear this and think to themselves, it's possible. Think to themselves, Esther can do it, so can I. And hopefully open up more hearts and homes to adopting the single person, as married people, as older kids, hopefully. Yes. It's really our prayer that some of the older kids that are waiting would really get adopted. And that's just the reality of the situation. So that's it for this episode. Thanks, Esther. We'll have you back again for sure. Really looking forward to your talk, Nothing is Beyond Repair. I'm really excited for that. So that's it for today. That's it for our podcast. I hope that you guys enjoyed listening to Esther. You can reach out to her, by the way. You can reach out to us, and we'll make sure Esther gets your message. If you have words of encouragement for her, advice, if there are any adoptive families out there, adoptive single moms out there, or if you have any questions, please reach out to us, and we'll make sure Esther gets to respond to that. She'll probably see it first. Yeah, she'll field through all that. And so, yeah, stay in touch with us on our different social media platforms. Looking forward to hearing from you guys in the days to come. So that's it for us, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
That was the Family is the Answer podcast by Rohe Foundation and powered by Podcast Network Asia. If you're interested to know more about adoption and foster care, visit our website at rohefoundation.org, where you can find articles, videos, and other resources. You can also find us on social media. We're Rohe Foundation on Instagram and Facebook. Again, thanks for listening, and I hope to catch you at our next episode. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia, the hosts of the program, or other programs of the network. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.